When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everyone. This is Keena Wolfenstein, and you're listening to the Complex Trauma Recovery Podcast. I am hopping on here today to talk a little bit about people pleasing. I thought, you know, it's such a common experience, so it would be worth just making a little episode talking about my view on it, my experience with it from the lens of complex attachment trauma. And also, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but I have seen so many debates online recently about if people pleasing is manipulative or not, if people pleasing is a form of manipulation. So I kind of wanted to weigh in on that as well. Before I jump in, just a few little show notes. My link tree will be posted in the podcast description below. I have a bunch of resources there that you guys can check out, including my practice website, my Patreon, which if you subscribe to my Patreon, it really helps support the work that I do, and you also gain access to a bunch of bonus content. I also have a workshop coming up on March 10th that is all about attachment and attachment trauma that I would love for some folks to sign up for. It's going to be really good. So you can find all of that in my link tree. Thank you for being here and for supporting the podcast. So let me just start by talking about, like, what is people pleasing and how do I conceptualize it? And I'll say I kind of have some grievances with the ways that some people online present it. Like, I saw this creator on TikTok a while ago that was basically like, I'm going to tell you guys, you know, the solution to working on people pleasing. All you have to do is you just have to learn how to tolerate discomfort. It was like basically saying that the cause of people pleasing is just that you're not able to tolerate the discomfort of people being upset with you or disappointed in you or conflict. And so you use people pleasing as a way to not have to sit with that discomfort. And that if you just learn to sit with the discomfort, that's how you stop people pleasing. And listen, that might resonate for some people, but I really don't like it when people oversimplify things like that. Because, I mean, first of all, there are many routes for people pleasing. Like, it's, you know, especially from a trauma-informed lens, it can be complicated how people develop those patterns. And also, it's not that easy for people with trauma to be, oh, just learn to sit with the discomfort. Like, people pleasing is, you know, often a trauma response, a trauma adaptation, and telling people that they just need to learn to sit with discomfort can be a little bit belittling or a little bit kind of dismissive and demeaning. I feel the same way, like, seeing all these people talk about how, like, people pleasing is manipulative. And some people will say, once I realized that I was being manipulative by people pleasing, I just stopped. And I'm just like, man, this must feel bad to watch this content for people that really struggle with this. And I've had a lot of clients that really struggle with people pleasing. And the thing is, like, they don't want to be people pleasers, right? They're coming to me for help because they want to be able to set boundaries. They want to be able to tolerate conflict. They want to be able to, you know, be assertive in communication with people. And they know that it's not healthy to people please. So sometimes there's this shaming perspective that I notice where it's like, I don't know, like, people just need to be told how unhealthy and dysfunctional it is to people please. And then they're going to go, oh, you're right, I'll stop that. And what I want folks to understand is that, like, a lot of the people that are people pleasing, they know it's not good. You know, they know it's not an ideal way to communicate, that it harms them, that it makes their relationships less authentic. But it's not that easy to just stop when it's rooted in trauma. So I view people pleasing as an attachment adaptation, right? Anything that is based on relationships is based on the way that we navigate relationships and interactions with people is an attachment-based adaptation. So it's rooted in these specific experiences that we have, these specific emotional learnings that we have, based on our attachment experiences, usually in childhood and in our families of origin. And So telling someone, you know, basically just stop it, just stop people pleasing, is like the same as telling someone just have a secure attachment style, just stop having an anxious attachment, you know, pattern, just stop having avoidant attachment adaptations, just trust people, just feel safe, right? Like that's how it comes across. So from the trauma-informed perspective, what is people-pleasing rooted in? It is rooted in some kind of deeply held emotional knowing, to use some coherence therapy language, an emotional knowing, which exists in the felt sense, right? So it's not like just a cognitive distortion, as CBT may frame it. It is a felt sense of danger when it comes to being assertive. And that can come from a range of different things, but I'll go over kind of like what I have found to be the most common roots of that. So the first would be like for people that grow up with actual abuse, like they grow up with like violence, you know, physical violence or verbal emotional violence, explosiveness, chaos, you know, really like destructive and scary behaviors from caregivers, the fawn response is literally like a survival mechanism, right? Pete Walker talks in his book about complex PTSD about the suppression of the fight instinct, because for a lot of kids in abusive situations, having a fight response puts them even more in danger, right? If they get mad and they stand up for themselves and they defend themselves and they use their voice, they're going to be hurt worse, or their siblings are going to be hurt worse, or the whole family is going to unravel, right? And so fawning is a response that develops based on, you know, these experiences where a kid figures out, okay, what is the best way to keep myself safe, to keep my siblings safe, to prevent the house from erupting into violence? And a lot of the time, the best way to do that is to be hyper, hyper aware of other people's moods and emotions, to be, you know, to have the like hypervigilance when it comes to any changes in someone's mood or tone of voice or facial expressions or body language, and then being able to like preemptively jump in and smooth things over. So be really keeping the caregivers calm is the way to be safe. Keeping the adults calm and happy, even if it means, you know, sacrificing your own boundaries and your own voice and your own needs and all of that different stuff. So this is an absolute survival response. And when I've worked with these kinds of clients, what's coming up as an adult in those moments of people pleasing is actually a sense of terror. Like I think people trivialize it so much. They're like, oh, just learn to tolerate discomfort. It's not just discomfort. People are experiencing a sense of their lives being in danger. And yes, that's not what's happening in the present, but that's how PTSD works. We are re-experiencing past trauma in the present moment. And so what will happen is that someone will, you know, their body and brain will do what they learn to do. So they'll be sensing the tension. They'll be picking up on some sort of unhappiness from someone. They're hyper aware of people's body language and facial expressions and tone of voice. And their body is doing what it's learned how to do, which is jump into action and keep everyone happy and keep everyone safe. And when we do, or to keep everyone happy in order to feel safe. And so when we jump in and we do some deeper exploration, you know, we might explore like, yeah, what does it feel like is going to happen if you don't people please? Like, what's the risk? What is your body telling you the risk will be if you just stand your ground or speak up or set your boundaries or whatever it may be? And often what people get in touch with is a sense of genuine terror, like life or death, I'm unsafe, I'm going to get hurt, right? I'm going to be the target of these people's rage. It also comes from having caregivers that aren't able to regulate their own emotions at all. So it's like when you have caregivers that are not able to regulate their own emotions and their emotions basically become everyone's problem, right? Like their emotions are taken out on the children and the household. It becomes really necessary to keep everyone happy because you have a felt sense within you that other people can't manage their emotions, so I need to manage their emotions for them. And that's another thing that can be processed with trauma therapy, but it's intense. It's hard work. It's hard work to get the body to understand that not everyone is like, you know, the way that your family was, that there are people now that actually can manage their emotions. And even if they're upset about something, they don't have the right to take it out on you. Maybe they can handle their own upset feelings. And hey, if someone was to take something out on you, you're not helpless anymore. You have power. You have the right to, you know, say fuck off and, you know, get out of there and set your boundaries. So there's a lot of things that we can do to kind of go through the therapeutic process to shift these things. But that's where it's coming from a lot of the time. It basically gets encoded into our understandings of reality that, like, this is the only way that I can be safe is by managing the emotions of everyone around me, even at my own cost. And I've talked before about how, like, if we're engaging in something that hurts us, it's usually because our brains feel like there's some even worse outcome that could happen if we don't do it. It's like, yeah, people pleasing sucks. People pleasing makes me feel small and resentful and has all these negative outcomes. But my body and my brain have decided that people pleasing is a better option than facing, like, the total chaos and violence and anger and rage and terror of the alternative. So that's what's happening in those moments. And the other thing I really want people to understand is that it's not a conscious choice. Like, when I see especially people talking about the, like, is people pleasing manipulative, it feels like it's being framed as, like, a conscious choice. Like, yeah, I'm gonna people please because I want everyone to like me. It's so much more automatic than that. It's an autopilot response. It happens so quickly. And that's what happens with these things that are rooted in implicit traumatic learnings. Like, they happen really fast without conscious awareness a lot of the time. And they happen even when your consciousness is trying to tell you to do something else. So even if your logical brain is like, come on, set the boundary, your body's like, nope, it's not safe, right? So that's one really common route. Now, if someone grew up in a household where maybe there wasn't, like, overt violence or abuse or those kinds of things, there are still other consequences that can be associated with not people pleasing. So an example would be in a family where, again, there's usually going to be some emotional immaturity or emotional neglect in these cases, but basically where caregivers are not able to hold space for their children to be full people, and what is at stake is the loss of the connection. So it's not necessarily like, oh, if I stand up for myself or if I have a fight instinct, I'm going to be physically hurt or yelled at or there's going to be chaos. But instead, it's basically like the attachment is withdrawn. So what gets encoded is a feeling that, like, this is the only way to avoid abandonment. My place in my relationships requires me to make myself small, to prioritize other people, to not use my voice, to not stand up for myself, to be agreeable, to be, you know, to make things easy for other people. So, yeah, it's not terror of something, you know, really scary is going to happen where my life is going to be in danger, but it's a different kind of terror, which is like, I'm going to be alone, I'm going to be outcast, I'm going to be alienated, I'm going to be abandoned, I'm going to have no one. People are going to change their minds about me. I'm not going to be loved. I'm not going to be valued, you know, and that is just as, really, it is just as life or death, because I've talked before about how our attachment needs are life or death needs. Like, we really need attachment to feel safe in the world, especially as children relying on our parents. So the idea of your parents just abandoning you and disliking you and disconnecting from you, that's really scary. So kids are really, really good at perceiving their caregivers' vulnerabilities and weaknesses. And they're really good at figuring out, like, who do I need to be to keep the family intact, to make it so I get the best responses from mom and dad or whoever, so we can all get along, so we can be okay. What do I need to do so my parents can be okay? Because I need them to be okay so I can be okay, you know, because it feels extremely destabilizing when your caregivers are not okay. And so if you sense early on that your parents can't handle your anger, they can't handle your voice, they can't handle conflict, you're going to suppress those parts of yourself. You're going to shut those parts of yourself down. Or maybe, you know, this happens also in cases where parents have a lot of emotional vulnerability and there's parentification, like where a child learns that basically it's their job and it's their responsibility to take care of their parent. And without that, the relationship won't exist. And so that feeling gets carried into adult relationships as well. And it gets experienced as, again, this felt sense that this is the only way for me to stay in connection is to make myself smaller and to devalue myself and to not cause any ripples or not cause any difficulty or not ask to be accommodated. Or so you know, there's other things too, but those are kind of like the two most common attachment-based themes that I have found come up. And they're very deep-rooted. They're very implicit. Now, they totally can change. Like, I love working on this with people. I've had really great experiences therapeutically processing this with people, but they're not super simple. They're not super simple. They're rooted in complex trauma. So let's talk about the whole is people-pleasing manipulation thing. This debate really bothers me because, first of all, I mean, I think it depends a lot on like semantics and how do you define manipulative and how literally do you take that definition. For me, I feel that the word manipulative has certain connotations. I feel that it has connotations of being, you know, kind of like malicious and coercive and intentional. You know, manipulation is when someone is trying to get their way, but through kind of like indirect coercive measures, or at least that is how I have always kind of understood it. And I think kind of like that's a pretty common cultural definition of it. And so when people say, you know, people pleasing is manipulation, sometimes what comes to mind for me is I'm like, well, is it manipulation when you see a bear to, you know, get down on the ground or yell or do these different things that are supposed to get the bear to go away? Or if you are a woman and you're with a man and you're feeling unsafe and you're feeling uncomfortable and your instincts are to kind of like not let him see that you're uncomfortable and be nice and be sweet so you don't make him upset, is that manipulation? I mean, I guess kind of you could define it that way because it's someone trying to get a certain outcome indirectly, but the outcome they're trying to get is their own safety, right? It's not like I'm trying to coerce you into doing something that benefits me. It's like I'm trying to protect myself from getting assaulted or eaten by a bear or whatever the case may be. So, of course, for people with complex trauma, you know, the issue is that our fire alarms are going off when there's no fire. So we're experiencing a sense of danger, like a sense of needing to protect ourselves from a threat, even if there's not a threat present. And that's what we need to work on in trauma therapy. Like that's what trauma therapy is for, is to help people orient more to the safety of the present moment and to be able to tell the difference between like a trigger from the past and a current day threat and to be able to feel safer and like all of that. But I really don't think calling it manipulative is accurate because I think that paints a picture that people are like intentionally going, okay, I'm going to be really nice to everyone so that way everyone will like me and I'll be favored more and I'll be more popular. And like it's this intentional plan to kind of play a role or play a character for your own benefits. And I think when we frame it in the context of like, this is what I have to do to avoid imminent danger, like that just, it just doesn't feel right for me to describe that as manipulation. Like it's a survival response, right? It's a survival adaptation. So I think maybe some people have just known certain individuals who were kind of people pleasing and also were kind of like manipulative people and are speaking from personal experience there. I mean, someone that is a people pleaser could also be manipulative. It's not like those things are mutually exclusive, but if we're going to describe people-pleasing as a manipulation tactic, then I think we would have to describe pretty much every attachment adaptation as a manipulation tactic. Anxious attachment is manipulation. Avoidant attachment is manipulation. All of the different strategies that people use to try to feel safe in attachments, like that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing with insecure attachment, is that we develop all of these different strategies, all of these different strategies to try to be safe. And that is human. That's human. When we sense a problem, when we sense a risk or a danger, we're going to adapt and we're going to develop strategies to keep ourselves safe, to protect ourselves. So I just think if we're going to call that manipulation, like we have to call so many things manipulation. And at that point, I think it almost like waters down the term. So that's my take. If you've seen that and you have felt ashamed of your people pleasing or felt like you're being a bad manipulative person, I hope that this has been helpful. And I hope that we can all be conscious of where these different attachment responses really come from and how deeply ingrained they are into kind of our subconscious automatic responses. So in terms of how to work on this stuff, you know, I love coherence therapy for this. I love internal family systems for this.
Both of those therapeutic modalities are really, really excellent at working with any attachment wounds and attachment adaptations. I'm sure there's lots of others that could also be appropriate for this, but those are the two main ones that I use. And the process starts with really building compassion for what your body is reacting to, like really building an empathetic awareness of what have you learned about conflict? What have you learned about other people being in a bad mood that makes it so intolerably dangerous that your body feels it's necessary to react in these different ways? And then once we've really built like an embodied, empathetic, compassionate awareness of that, then we get to move into kind of finding those juxtapositions to shift it. And I mentioned what a few of those might be earlier, like to know that there are people that are emotionally mature. There are people that can handle their anger and frustration and disappointment, and they're not going to take it out on you. They can manage their own moods. Like that's a big one for anyone that grew up with emotionally immature parents. Like being able to soak that into your body that, oh, it's not my job. Like I don't have to take responsibility for this. I don't have to manage this. They can manage this. But then the other piece definitely has to do with helplessness. And I've talked before about how helplessness is like one of the biggest pieces for what makes complex childhood trauma so traumatic, because we don't have power as kids. We can't set boundaries. We can't stand up for ourselves. All we can do are develop these different adaptive strategies to try to manage the risks around us. And so another huge kind of disconfirming experience that can create a lot of transformation is really integrating a sense of empowerment, that you are no longer helpless, right? So that if you have someone who is treating you like crap when they're angry, you have the right to walk away. You have the right to leave. You have the right to say, I'm not willing to tolerate this kind of treatment. And I mean, listen, obviously there's complex situations. Like I know people that are stuck at home living with their family and things like that. So I'm not trying to paint everything with too broad of a stroke here. But generally speaking, we have a lot more empowerment and resources as adults than we do as children. And people pleasing is something that we develop from a position of helplessness. It's something that we learn to do because we have no other options. So really integrating, you know, a sense that I have other options can be a huge part of how people pleasing gets better. So just a brief little episode today. I hope you guys found this interesting and helpful. I definitely can't talk for as long when it's just me, but I try to pack a lot into these little episodes, these little solo episodes. Again, please consider checking out the workshop that I have coming up or my Patreon for more content. I appreciate you. Bye.